Hello everyone, and welcome to the fourth webinar in the Dignity for All Poverty Policy Series. Today I'm so pleased to say that we'll be having a really excellent conversation with experts Sasha McNoll and Rachel Chung on food security in Canada and what policies we need to see in Canada before the federal election that are related to our Canadian poverty reduction strategy. So as you all know, this is part of the Dignity for All webinar series, and we will be speaking to these experts and getting their input on what this will all mean for a Canadian poverty reduction strategy. So we have two expert panelists joining us today. First up, we have Sasha McNoll from Community Food Centres Canada. Welcome, Sasha. Sasha is the policy manager at Community Food Centres Canada, an organization that works to build vibrant and welcoming community food centers in low-income neighborhoods to improve people's ability to access healthy food in a dignified way. Sasha has worked at a variety of nonprofits, notably at Food Secure Canada, where she focused on school food advocacy and food policy governance. Sasha is also a member of the Toronto Food Policy Council and as co-chair of the Toronto Youth Food Policy Council and was a founding member and chair of Food Secure Canada Youth Caucus. So welcome, Sasha. I'm so pleased to have you join us today.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Great. And we also have Rachel here today. Rachel is with Food Secure Canada, Rachel Chung. And Rachel Chung is the campaign manager of Eat, Think, Vote, which is a series of 50 events taking place in Canadian communities where citizens will dialogue with political candidates about food security and other food issues ahead of the political election for the 2019 federal election. She has dedicated much of her work to food security, working with various nonprofits in Quebec, as well as the Montreal Public Health Department. Rachel is also actively involved in the community with other sustainable development nonprofits and groups as an event organizer. So welcome, Rachel, as well.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Great. And I will note as well that I myself here am joined by Sarisa from Citizens for Public Justice.
Hello, everybody.
And Sarisa has been gracious enough to join these webinars again as Canada Without Poverty and Citizens for Public Justice host these Dignity for All Poverty Policy webinars. So with all of those introductions underway, I'm looking forward to a really fantastic and enriching conversation. And perhaps we will start off with Sasha to give us an overview of food security in Canada and what this all means for poverty and the Canadian Poverty Reduction Strategy. So Sasha, please take it away.
Great, thanks Michelle. So as you mentioned, Community Food Centres Canada builds community centres in low-income neighbourhoods across the country that deliver healthy food programming and other important supports. And Community Food Centres serve populations that have very high rates of food insecurity, which I assume if you're on this webinar, you know what that term means, but just in case, it means that they have trouble affording sufficient and adequate food. And this is a problem for 4 million Canadians, or about 1 in 8 households. And unsurprisingly, this problem is worse for all of the kinds of populations you'd expect, people of color, Indigenous people, immigrants, children, single mothers. And it has severe health implications. So people who are food insecure have more trouble affording healthy food and consume fewer servings of fruits and vegetables. That can lead to higher rates of diet-related disease, such as heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. So, for example, in Ontario, annual healthcare costs are more than double for adults living in severe food insecurity. And it can also lead to poor mental health and increased incidence of depression, suicidal thoughts, anxiety disorders. So obviously this is a really big problem. And so what do we do about it? I'd like to start out here by saying something that might be counterintuitive, which is that food is not the solution to food insecurity, except maybe in part in remote northern communities where the cost of food is prohibitive. But Canadian studies have found that most food insecure people don't even use food banks, and for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it's super stigmatizing, and that so the 21% of Canadians who do, it doesn't really actually impact their level of food insecurity. So the most compelling Canadian evidence shows that the most effective way to decrease food insecurity is actually to increase income. So, for example, there's one study that shows when Canadians reach the age of 65 and are eligible for old age security and guaranteed income supplement, their risk of food insecurity is declined by 50%. And then similarly, in Newfoundland and Labrador, when food insecurity rates when social assistance rates were increased, food insecurity rates among social assistance recipients decreased by nearly half in the 5 years following that increase. So basically, what Community Assistance of Canada is looking for from the government is action on income security and poverty reduction, not trying to increase the amount of food or lower the cost of food in most of the country. So that being said, we have three asks around the election, and two of them are sort of food insecurity related. So the first is the way that we measure food insecurity in Canada is through what's called the Food Security Survey Module in the Canada Community Health Survey. The problem with this is that provinces, except for once every 5 years, can opt out of this. And that means that we don't have up-to-date annual information on food insecurity rates across the country. And indeed, the last year for which we really know what food insecurity looked like in Canada was 2012, and it's now 2019. So the first ask is that that should be mandated annually, and all provinces can't opt out of that. Provinces and territories can't opt out of that. And then the second thing is the poverty reduction strategy lays out a target to reduce poverty by 50% by 2030, and we would like a similar target to reduce food insecurity by 50% by 2030. And while that's mostly income related, it's also a bit of a broader problem than poverty. So, for example, more than 30% of food insecure Canadians live in households with incomes above the low income measure. And so this third of people who are living in food insecurity, therefore might not be touched by the poverty reduction goal. And they might be facing a whole host of other issues. So, while their incomes are considered technically sufficient, they may live in a big city like Vancouver, Toronto, and have an affordable housing cost. They may have a disability or a condition that, and have high medical expenses, or they may have children and be facing urban child care costs, or maybe they live in the north and are paying, two or three times more what we pay in the south for a nutritious diet. So really, food insecurity is about a whole host of issues, including income, and the reason the Canadian government should focus on that is because food is often the first basic need that people will forego because it's more flexible than other expenses. So, for example, if I told you that you had to choose between paying your rent or paying for food, you would probably pay your rent in order to not get evicted. So, as such, we think it's one of the best measures of deprivation. And then the last ask is really around how the federal government can increase incomes. We think that the best way they can do that is and the most efficient way is through the tax system. We have evidence from the Canada Child Benefit and the Guaranteed Income Supplement that those have been really meaningful for families with children living in poverty and for seniors living in poverty. But that leaves this group of childless adults that are 18 to 64, who, especially for single adults, are suffering from much higher rates of poverty and food insecurity. And so we think that we can start to shift the dial for this population by increasing refundable tax credits and by converting non-refundable tax credits to refundable ones. And I think I'm probably running out of time, but very quickly, for just to get in the weeds a little bit, a non-refundable tax credit can reduce the amount of that a person owes in income tax, but it can't provide a refund. And so the most it can do is take your income tax to zero. But refundable tax credits, like the Canada Child Benefit or like the Canada Workers Benefit, can provide a refund. And so that means that's a really important benefit for people living in poverty. So we'd love to see existing refundable tax credits like the Canada Workers Benefit increase. And then we'd like to see non-refundable tax credits, particularly the disability tax credit, for example, made refundable so that those populations can, you know, can get some financial help from the federal government. Yes, I will leave it there for now.
Great. Thank you so much, Sasha. That was very helpful, I think, to start off our discussion. Rachel, why don't now we hand the reins over to you to take it away and giving us an overview of some of the recommendations Food Secure Canada has and other folks have, in particular from the Eat Think Vote campaign.
Great. Thank you, Michelle, and thank you, Sasha, for that great overview on food insecurity in Canada. So maybe I could start by talking about what Food Secure Canada does. We're a pan-Canadian alliance of organizations and individuals working towards building a food system that's healthy, sustainable, and just, and where no one goes hungry. So we've been doing this work for the past 2 decades, and of course, food security is at the heart of a lot of our work. And I'm the campaign manager of Eat Think Vote. So what Eat Think Vote is like a nonpartisan campaign where we bring together community members and people across Canada to speak with their federal candidates about food insecurity and other food issues. So all the things that Sasha talked about, how that looks like living with the food insecurity every day, we want to make that tangible for federal candidates to better understand the people in the community and their riding, but also to make the political process tangible for people in the community, especially groups that are often underrepresented in voting or underrepresented in the discourse ahead of election and in policy making. So this is actually the second time we're running the Eat, Think, Vote campaign. And the first time we ran it was in 2015, ahead of the last federal election. And food security was a big part of it as well, as one of our big asks. Other asks in that campaign that we have were also around putting in place a national healthy school food program so no child goes hungry while they're at school, making it possible to have affordable food in northern communities, and better supporting new farmers. And the overall ask for our 2015 campaign was actually for a new food policy that is cohesive and brings together different departments to work together for healthy, sustainable, and just food across Canada. And what's really exciting about it is that that we just got our first national food policy. So I think we'll get into that a little bit later in this conversation. But it was really exciting to see that thousands, there was 4,500 individuals who participated in the Eat Think Vote campaign last time, over 69 events across the country, in every province, in every territory. And they spoke with the candidates, and the message got passed through. There's over 160 candidates who participated, and over 40 of whom were elected. And what's really exciting, too, is 5 of them were promoted to cabinet, meaning that they were the heads of the specific departments. For example, James Philpott attended an Eat Think Vote event. So it's cool to see these community conversations to bring light to food insecurity and other issues really can have an impact. And it's fun to see the national food policy that has been launched now just this summer in June. And it was launched by the Ministry of Agriculture and Agri-Food. So that's Eat Think Vote and a little bit of what Food Secure Canada does. And you asked about recommendations. So like I mentioned, last time we had some specific asks, and the overall big ask was for national food policy. So now we've got it. And we're changing strategy a little bit. We don't have recommendations specifically yet. on what we're doing instead is going to the communities and letting people speak about these issues with their candidates and trying to surface the key messages from the community. That said, on food security specifically, we've been working closely with CSDC to look at what are the most innovative and most interesting and the policy options that can have a lot of punch and make a real difference. So part of the campaign is that we develop a series of backgrounders. So these are documents that give you everything you need to need about a specific issue, especially food insecurity. So what are the latest statistics? We've been working with SASHA, FCFTC, as well as different contact experts, for example, Valerie Tarasek at the Proof Research Center at the University of Toronto, to talk about what does food insecurity look like in Canada. So it's a lot of things that Sasha has mentioned affecting a lot of Canadians, far too many. I think the last national data we have is something crazy, currently we're at 13.8% of Canadians among the provinces. And in the territories, it's up to 52% of those living in Nunavut who experience food insecurity. And that's far too much to be, and we should not accept anything else other than zero hunger in Canada. And so how does that look like, what are the policy options going forward? Because we worked closely with CSDC on the policy options, we agree with a lot of them, and they're included in the backgrounder that we provide as part of the campaign. Then in terms of specific asks going forward, we don't have any yet, but looking at to surface the key stories that come up from these community events. So that you can vote. That's where we're working on food security. There's also a lot of other tools that we're including in this campaign, because how do we take action on this? How do organizations and individuals across Canada take action on this and ensure that the incoming government and candidates across all the parties understand that food security is a key issue for Canadians? They can do that by taking part in events, by attending an event in the community, or organizing an event in the community and working with others. We always encourage different organizations to work together, because we give you all the tools you need to make it as turnkey as possible to organize an event. But it's still a bit of work, so we do recommend for people to work together. And we have other tools, for example, a really fulsome website with backgrounds of different issues, including food insecurity. Also social media tools, it's just copy and paste and graphics and things like that to make it easy. And so we're really hoping that ahead of the election, that as we talk about job and economy and climate change, that these eating vote events will remind candidates that food is interlaced with all these things. It's a complex issue, and especially food insecurity is very closely tied with many of these other issues. And we're hoping the communities can have these conversations across the country ahead of the election.
Thank you so much, Rachel. That's some great context on Eat, Think, Vote. And that leads nicely into some questions that I have for you. But just before I begin, if anybody participating has questions they would like to ask, please note the Q&A box in the left-hand side of your screen, where you can ask any questions and we'll facilitate from there. But Rachel, you spoke to this a little bit. Regarding Canada's food policy, what are the next steps now that it has been released? I know you touched on this. If Sasha wants to jump in with anything on what these next steps could possibly be.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with the National Food Policy. It was launched in June 2019, so this year, released by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. And there's a lot of interesting parts of the National Food Policy, and we have a more in-depth, policy analysis of it, so I won't go into detail, but from Food Secure Canada's side, we're really excited about two things, because first of all, we have a national food policy, and not just the agriculture policy or health policy, but one that touches food that brings together these elements. We've been working for 2 decades to have this food policy, so we're very excited. And I think two points that are interesting to point out that Food Secure Canada has been working on, and that do intersect with food insecurity, is one is the national school food program. So ensuring that no child goes hungry and they have access to healthy food at school. That's been named in the policy. It doesn't have resources tied to it, unfortunately. But it's been named, and that's really important that it's been named. The second thing is a multi-stakeholder food policy governance mechanism. So a way for civil society, indigenous communities, and industry, and researchers and academia to all participate in the implementation and monitoring of this policy. And these are two things we've been asked, two of our big asks for the policy, so we're excited to see this going forward. But now that it's out there, is to see how it will be implemented. So, for example, for the National School Food Program, this will provide a healthy meal or snack to children, either at little or no cost to students, and it would be working with each province and territory to see how that's laid out. And Sasha can surely comment a lot more on this because she oversaw this project quite a bit when she was working with FSC and the Coalition for Healthy School Food. This program would counter the prevalence of junk food in schools, working towards prevention and building healthier diets. And it's good because Canada is only one of the only industrialized countries, actually, without a national school food program. So it's good that this intention has been gained in the national food policy, but there's no resources to tie to it. So there's no money or dollars tied to putting this program in place. So that's one of the next steps, is that the incoming government will need to look at how this looks like, rolling out this program across all the provinces and territories, and dedicate resources towards it. In terms of food security specifically, we also need a concrete plan. So Canada has been committed to the Sustainable Development Goal of ending hunger by 2030. That is a really bold goal. That's only 11 years away, and we need a concrete plan to make sure that everyone in Canada has enough to eat. And from Food Security Canada's point of view, we're also disappointed that a rights-based approach was not included in the national food policy. So we need a concrete plan. And I guess before talking to Seth, I need to say on this, is that we also need support from the incoming government. Food policy is a big step forward on food, to which like every Canadian should have access to good, healthy food. And I hope this is something that all parties can agree to. So I hope that the incoming government will protect this food policy and find a way to work together with different provinces and territories on seeing it through and dedicating the dollar amounts it needs to actually implementing the ambitious vision this food policy has.
That's great. Thank you so much. I'm wondering, Sasha, do you have anything else to jump in on with this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, so the food policy announced some important initiatives, and Rachel mentioned a few of them. But what I'll say is that it's not really the best vehicle for reducing food insecurity. And I think that the poverty reduction strategy is, and indeed the food policy does match the poverty reduction strategy. So one important thing that the Food Policy Council that Rachel mentioned will do is that it will set targets on a variety of food policy issues, and we're hoping that food insecurity is one of those. But you know, I would say that the next step for kind of to make sure that the Food Policy Council does set a target on food insecurity, and to make sure that the government moves forward on meeting its goal of reducing poverty by 50% by 2030.
Awesome, thank you so much. So we've touched a little bit on like the need to collaborate between governments. What does this mean for the question of federal, territorial, provincial responsibility, and who is it that needs to step up?
Seth, you can go ahead. I'm still going to listen to my idea.
So I'll say that the food policy is called a food policy for Canada and not a national food policy, because there's no sign-on from the provinces. So it's unclear whether there's going to be any vertical collaboration across government on this file. But in terms of food insecurity, you know, as I said, we need to see the federal government move forward in meeting its poverty reduction goals and on setting targets for food insecurity reduction. And then we need the provinces to improve social assistance to better support the most vulnerable people in the country.
Great. We have a question from Tamara, and it kind of coincides with a question that I have as well. So first, how do we address enormous disparities in northern Canada, for example, with Nutrition North, and how might food policy look differently in northern communities?
Oh, so this is, maybe I could start, and Sasha can complete to this. How might the food policy look differently in North community? It looks to look very different. Because northern communities and isolated communities are so disproportionately affected by food insecurity. And so the rollout should be very different. And, you know, despite millions that have been invested in Nutrition North subsidies to make food more affordable, food still remains prohibitively expensive. And I think we recognize now that the foods and items are subsidized often through the lens of Southerners. And so I think in general, the northern communities need to have more, need to be able to have more say and ownership in how things are rolled out and how the national food policy will be rolled out in their own communities. This can take place in several ways. So recently, as part of the national food policy, there's $50 million that is included for northern isolated communities initiative. And this fund was announced earlier this month, and the goal is to specifically increase food security across the North. And I think the wording something like supporting local community-led projects, to reduce dependence on Southern food industry and associated costs and like shipping and transporting, which is a lot of the reason why food is so expensive in the North. This includes funding for Northern food systems. There's also some, I think, for like a working group for territorial initiatives and things like that. So it's important that people affected by food insecurity and people living in the North have a good say in this. And Food Secure Canada actually recently released a study that we've been working on in collaboration with the Fife Community First group of academics and FLEDGE and the Lakehead University and St. Paul's University on evaluating the northern food system and what needs to be done to increase northern food security and sovereignty, and some key opportunities for the food policy to work on this includes food support initiatives that revitalize traditional food processes. For example, training in harvesters, sharing of traditional knowledge. So that could be something that perhaps that could be part of the Northern Isolated Community Initiative Fund that was announced as part of the food policy. They could also help promote the social and informal economy of sharing. So there's a lot of times a mixed economy framework where food is shared, if there's a spot at the store, especially for a lot of for a country of traditional foods. I hope that as the food policy is rolled out, it could support that as well. And also strengthening capacity to store and transport and transform food. This is a very different climate and context. And finally, I'd also say to streamline communication and policy coherence between the territories and those living in the North and with Ottawa, and enabling, again, communities to take control of their food systems with a lens of people living in the North, and especially Indigenous populations to self-determine how that looks like.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. I mean, I agree with what Rachel said, and certainly it needs to be kind of driven by Northern communities. It's a serious issue. I think food insecurity rates in Nunavut, for example, hover just under 50%. I think it remains to be seen what the recent changes to nutrition alerts will do. I think the most promising change is probably the introduction of a harvester support grant that will subsidize the cost of traditional hunting and harvesting activities. So it'll be interesting to see whether that kind of substantially facilitates the procurement of country foods. But, you know, we're interested to see what happens because, you know, there's been a few changes, but food insecurity rates haven't decreased since the program was introduced. And so clearly there's a lot more to be done.
Great. Well, thank you both so much, Rachel and Sasha, from both Theresa and myself. This has been incredibly interesting conversation, and I think that those folks who are joining us right now and who will likely be listening to this session a little bit after have learned a lot about what we need to see coming up to this federal election, and I think we'll all have our eyes quite a bit on what's going to come next on this really important file. So for those who are listening, please stay tuned for our next session, which will be on August 7th. At 1 o'clock, we will be talking again, and this time we will be speaking to our colleagues on housing and homelessness. And in particular, we'll be speaking to Stefania of the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness and Emily Parody, who is a Maitrey Fellow. So we very much look forward to that session. And if you'd like to join us, please visit dignityforall.ca/webinars to register for that session. And until then, we will catch up with you. And thank you again so much, Sasha and Rachel, for joining us
What an excellent conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.